This is an ABC podcast.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Hello, welcome to The Country Hour. I'm Cassie Huff. Well, some very welcome black clouds have rolled across the state. Has it meant there are some puddles at your place, or perhaps it was just enough to settle the dust? Text me on 0467 922 891 because I would be interested to know how much rain you've had. You might even want to give me a call. Call me on 1300 222 891. Let me know how much rain has fallen at your place and whether or not it's going to make a difference to the rain to your cropping outlook, perhaps your livestock outlook as well for the rest of the year. Also, fishing for a giant Australian cuttlefish is again banned. I'll have more on why.
This is a huge game changer, as I said. This is really giving them a good level of protection about allowing them to get them back up the Spencer Gulf so they can mate, aggregate, and then they can commence the breeding cycle again.
More on that soon. But as I was saying, I'm really interested to know how much rain has fallen across the state. It's come in dribs and drabs. Text me 0467 922 891. Let me know where it's fallen. It'd be great to get a picture of just where it has fallen, because with the global grain production in turmoil due to war and drought in parts of the world, Australia could actually play a big role in feeding the world this year. But our farmers need rain, and Grain Producers SA Chair Adrian McCabe has been keenly awaiting a decent fall. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So, this long-awaited break in the season, do you think this is it?
Well, I think we're still hoping it's coming Sunday, Monday, aren't we? But yeah, that was predicted sort of 5 to 7 to 9, depending on where you were, to fall yesterday. Some areas got it, some didn't, but everyone got a sprinkle, I think, so hopefully everyone's got plants up and been kept alive, and looking forward to a decent break coming next week.
How much of South Australia's crop would have been planted by now?
Oh, gee, I reckon 80% of it would be in. I don't reckon there'd be much. South East might be waiting for a bit of a break, but I know in the mid-north and lower northern areas, it's sort of, 80 to 100% in. West Coast the big acreage guys are winding up, I think. So, no, I think most of it's in, got into some moisture, probably on the west coast. They've had a bit of moisture get it up. I know the Mallee's had bits and bits and crops emerging in some areas. In the lower north and mid-north, they've just gone dry and banged it in.
More people have probably sown into stored moisture than, say, this time last year, but it's still been a very dry period. How do you think the crops are faring?
Oh, I'm a bit tainted by my own experience where we're quite dry at Hamley Bridge, and we've got canola up, 50% germinated, looking pretty blue. Not sure it's going to survive or not. So, yeah, I'm probably a bit tainted by my own experience, but I think other areas have got it up quite well. They sort of had 5 and 7 mil dribs and drabs, and that's kept them up and got them away on time. They just need the big wedding rain to kick the season off and start storing moisture and get it away and really link the profiles up. I think, haven't been a lot of germinations or weeds yet, all that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's been an awkward start. But, yeah, those who have just got nice dribs and drabs of 2s and 5s and 7s have got away nice. And I know the EP of some areas there have linked up with some reasonable moisture now and are looking terrific if it continues to rain. Southeast had a dry summer, but they've had some rain since, which has got them up and away reasonably as a generalisation. Even some of the Mallee have had consistent little drops of rain and are up and away and need to get it all properly wetter, or proper wet, as they're saying. But probably the York Peninsula and lower north actually need the rain. I'm really looking forward to a really good drop to get things up and away, properly. It's sort of staggering up in patches and really waiting for a decent drop.
It's remarkable how much money is really riding on the predicted rain over the next week or so. How much rain have you had?
We had 2 mil at Hamley. So, kept the canola alive for another couple of days. That's a good thing. we're looking about, think about putting Metribuzin out and those sort of things. But, we wouldn't dare at the moment. The forecast rain might wash it straight down to the seed bed. Really looking forward to a big rain and getting the season off. Look, the predictions are still for a wet winter. This is, this is not not completely new to us. As general rain started end of May, June, July, probably a lot of years. But yeah, it's always nice to get an early May or an April break and do things easily without all the dust and without all the stress of it, really.
And I guess the forecast's taken a bit with a grain of salt, given the way that the season panned out last year. A lot of rain fell at inopportune times, really. Have many people been attracted by the high canola and lentil prices this year?
Yeah, I would have thought so. Yes, I know a lot of lentils gone in. And also the beauty about lentils is they don't require the high nitrogen price as well. So, there's been a lot of lentils go in, I think, where they're able. And certainly canola, although we're getting a bit late probably now for canola seeding or any reseeding that may need to happen. So probably drift back into lentils or wheat at this stage. But, yeah, the prices look amazing, don't they? So, and don't look like going anywhere for 3 years. The three-year-out price is quite staggering as well. So, yeah, it's great pricing, which is obviously not perfect for the people who need to buy grain across the equator. And they'll see 20 million people put into starvation is a figure I read the other day. So this isn't perfect for world production. So we need good rain to get production levels up and get some grain shipped around the world.
Absolutely. There's going to be a lot of slack needed to be filled with Ukraine and that Black Sea region in so much turmoil. And given how much it's cost to get this crop in, there must be a lot riding on actually pulling off a crop as well.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, but we need average yields, don't we? The prices or per hectare prices up, well over $1,000 a hectare to put a crop in. And then it's going to need to be fed. Fortunately, probably South Australia, organic carbon levels aren't too bad, and we've got grain ligands in the system. But you go into state where they're all relying on canola and wheat only with low organic carbon levels. I mean, it's massive for those areas trying to get nutrients into their crop, and it's going to be a very expensive year, that's for sure.
Well, hopefully this rain does come off because a lot of people across the state are looking for it. Thanks so much for your time today.
Brilliant. No, looking forward to the forecast a bit later in your program.
Good. Thanks, Adrian.
Good on you.
The grain producers, SA Chair Adrian McCabe there. Hopefully it will be a good forecast for whatever you're looking for. Hopefully there's rain on the way for those of you who are looking for it. And if you have received some, text me 0467 922 891 or phone 1300 222 891. Our Newport Pirie rural reporter Dimitri Panagiotaris is out and about today trying to catch up with people who might have had some rain. Hi, Dimitri, where are you?
Hey Cass, I'm here with Brenton Vanstone at his property. It's about 20 minutes outside of Port Pirie. So driven out here today, seen a few puddles on the road, but I actually expected a few more puddles. But pulling up today, I'm looking outside and can see a bit of grey in the sky, perhaps some more rain on the way. But I'm here with Brenton. Brenton, how much rain do you think you've got overnight?
We had about 6.5 mil overnight, and we had 0.5 mil yesterday, so it's not good when we're only measuring in 0.5 mil increments, but we're grateful for that. And yeah, there are some puddles around, and so some of the crops that we have sown dry, we think that they'll emerge successfully now.
And how much rain have you had so far this year?
Yeah, just before you came out, I looked at my notes, and we'd only had 20 mil for the whole year. So the sum total is the 7 mil we've had the last 2 days. So it's only 13 mils for the whole of the since January.
The last few days is really helping you out with that overall total. And how are you at the moment in the seeding program? What's happening?
Yeah, things have changed a lot. In earlier days when I first started farming, we always used to wait for the rain and sow into wet soil. But now the biology and the dynamics of farming has changed, and a lot of farmers just farm to the calendar and they just start on a specific date because they want to be finished by a specific date so as to get the longevity in the growing season. So, yeah, we're nearly finished, but some of the conditions we sowed into weren't all that pretty. There was clods of dirt and dust everywhere. So, yeah, we're in the final phase and hope to finish early next week.
And what have you planted?
We're about one-third wheat, one-third barley and one-third pulses, which is lentils and chickpeas.
How does that compare to what you planted last season?
Yeah, some people hunt the price. Obviously lentils are at a high price, but we just stick to a rotation and we just stick to that one-third, one-third, one-third. It just it normally evens out in the end. You get the law of averages kicks in. So, yeah, we're just kicking to that same staying to that same rotation.
Now, have you spoke to any of your neighbours? How are the other farmers in the region faring so far?
No, I've been going to too many meetings lately, so I haven't spoken to anybody. We haven't conversed, but I think we're pretty well all in the same boat. I think Crystal Brook only had about 3 mil, so we don't often beat them.
Now, we've heard a bit about mice in the area. Have you seen any mice around here?
Yeah, there's been, we saw several holes in the paddock, but we haven't actually seen much activity. Some of the more diligent farmers have been mouse baiting, and we haven't done any mouse baiting as yet, but we've just seen evidence of them, but there's not a lot of activity at night. So unless they're breeding up for...
they're waiting.
That's right.
And with everything going on in the world at the moment, what have your inputs costs been like?
Yeah, I'm conservative by nature, and it is. With the prices that there are, it could be high risk but high return, but it also could be high risk and minimal return. So I've just never seen anything like it. And it's the last 3 and a bit years, I've seen fertiliser triple in price. And we're just finding the inputs, like you do your farm plan, but it's just it's off the scale in relation to the cost of inputs.
Yeah. So other than that fertiliser, and you mentioned, you know, you've never seen anything like it, what else is something that you can note that you've not seen before?
Well, fuel over $2, and one of the guys who works with me is an ex-truckie, and he said, I started out at 20 cents a litre, you know, like, so it's, but fuel and fertiliser, but also input chemicals. And I think there's some misapprehension when they talk about farmers and chemicals. We'd love not to use them, but we know that we have to eliminate weeds, have to eliminate insect pests, because the end users want minimal insect damage or nil, and nor do they want the weed content. So, yeah, the chemicals, some of the chemical costs are just off the scale. So a lot of guys I've heard say that they just say, well, we're going to reintroduce the livestock component. At least you can chart your costs. And with sheep, the only thing is finding shearers.
In saying that, how are you feeling about the season ahead?
Yeah, I'm confident. Yeah. We've got a better stored soil moisture reserve than last year.
Yeah.
And I've been looking at some of the weather forecasters, and they're saying that the La Nina event hasn't weakened, and they're predicting above average rainfall to the end of the year, and might be a little bit of a blip in August, September. So, yeah, I'm confident.
Oh, that's great to hear. Those inputs will be, well worth it when the output comes. So, Brendan, thank you for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time, and all the best for the season ahead. Yeah. Back to you, Cass.
Thanks, Demetria.
Still a long way to go this season, but hopefully the forecast pans out this year. That was Demetria Panagiotaris speaking with Brenton Vanstone at his property near Port Pirie. Hopefully more rain is on the way. Lucas has texted in to say 12 millimetres at Crystal Brook, so a bit more than Brenton thought they got. John has texted in to say 17 mils at Kimber and 18 at Mangalow. So some falls getting up there for the west of the state, the Eyre Peninsula there. But I'd still love to know where else has it's fallen, maybe somewhere from the Mallee, or has the southeast finally got a bit of a drink? Text me 0467 922 891. It's coming up to 18 minutes past 12. Now, if you're a regular user of Meat and Livestock Australia's statistics database, you might have noticed a foreboding message that change is coming. MLA is changing the way it gives its information to consumers. It says this will mean more up-to-date information is available to the public. Angus Murray is a transformational analyst at MLA, and he talked through the changes with Peter Somerville.
The statistics database currently produces reports and data to public members, and we're currently restructuring how we collect and maintain our data within house. So as a part of that, we also have the opportunity to create a better system for the public to be able to interact with that data. Now, unfortunately, that means a few changes to the statistics database, but we're looking for a brighter future and in which way that we can present this data more timely and accurately. And in doing so, we'll be able to drive greater insights to producers, processors and industry members.
And when you talk about changes, what will people who use this database notice?
So the current reports that are generated out of the statistics database, we're modernising the way that the look and feel of that is, and also the data behind that is going to be attached to our live databases rather than currently it's sitting behind some old data systems that don't get updated quite as frequently. So they'll be able to get live data updates for their current markets, for the current statistics within the industry, as well as we're going to start producing some reports for overseas markets as well. and we're going to be able to get a greater look on the whole industry itself.
How many people use this database?
It's a very renowned platform. We have quite a few users. Unfortunately, with the current systems, we're not able to track it entirely who uses the platform itself, but from what we've found, it's highly regarded in the industry and well used. So we're looking to maintain that and improve that as part of this, and actually expand its potential in the industry. And that's the main driver of this change.
So when do these changes happen?
Yeah. So Peter, great question. The changes are going to roll out across September to the external members, and we're going to slowly ease that across. We've already put a little link to a form that you can sign up to hear the updates, and we're going to provide those updates to the people who sign up, as well as publicly on our mailing distribution. But you should see those changes start to roll out over September and basically end through to October.
MLA's Angus Murray speaking there with Peter Somerville. We'll get to weather next, but the South Australian government has temporarily reimposed a ban on all fishing of giant Australian cuttlefish in the Spencer Gulf north of Arno Bay and Wallaroo. That ban was lifted in 2020, but the Minister for Primary Industries, Claire Scriven, says she reimposed the restriction to protect the cuttlefish. Whyalla Mayor Claire McLaughlin says cuttlefish are an important tourism draw card for the region and called for the ban to be made permanent.
What this has done is actually increased the protection area. So it's basically meaning it has increased preventing fishing of the cuttlefish in the Spencer Gulf, spanning from the mean high water springs near Arno Bay to the Wallaroo Jetty. And this new protection, temporary protection agreement, will be in place until the 13th of May, 2023. So it's just really great. It allows the cuttlefish to make their way up to their aggregation area at just around from Point Lowley, and it just protects them in that process, which is the importance of having this particular protection area increased.
And yeah, looking at that temporary protection, that temporary cuttlefish closure area that goes from, like you said, up basically from across from Arno Bay to Wallaroo and up to Port and up to the rest of the Spencer Gulf north of that. Mm. How big of an increase is that on the areas that were already protected by from fishing?
Well, it's a huge increase from where it was. They were only protecting the area around the where they aggregate, etc. So this is a huge game changer. As I said, this is really giving them a good level of protection. It's about allowing them to get them back up the Spencer Gulf so they can mate, aggregate, and then they can commence the breeding cycle again. So it's really great, and it's also really important for the public who enjoy this wonderful tourism opportunity to go and either to dive with a cuttlefish, to view them. And it's going to protect that opportunity as well, because we know that it's a worldwide tourist attraction, and hopefully now with borders opening up and so forth, we're going to get a lot more tourists coming back to our city of Whyalla, and that's really good for our economy as well.
And as Mayor of Whyalla, how do you see the importance of the cuttlefish population to the city of Whyalla?
Well, I think it's incredibly important to the city of Whyalla. It's iconic for our city. So it's important that we take care of it. And as I said, it's a natural phenomenon that is so unique, and also, it's also incredibly important for tourism as well.
Looking at the recent last few years of the cuttlefish numbers, they have gone up and down a lot. What have the last if you've been keeping an eye on the cuttlefish numbers, what have the last few years been like for cuttlefish numbers with protections changing every now and again?
Well, obviously, when the protections were in place, they started stabilising and growing in numbers, which is really important. But we are really we're concerned about the fact that when the protections were reduced, that the numbers could drop. And I don't think anyone wants to take that risk. So I think having these this area reinstated is really positive for the cuttlefish numbers. And from what I'm hearing, it's they're coming in now, and people are able to observe them, etc., and dive with them. So that's a good sign.
Considering that the cuttlefish numbers did get quite low at one point, to only I think a few thousand in the count. So I suppose when at that time, what were your real concerns about the cuttlefish, and I suppose that the impact that those low numbers might have on Whyalla?
Look, I think it had a concern to the Whyalla community, and so therefore it shows the importance of having some protections in the area so that they can breed and have healthy population numbers without them being fished out. So yeah. So it's important that we do take care of them and allow them to breed and grow in this area just outside Wailani and Point Wiley.
What would you like want to happen with this closure zone from now on? Mm. Are you hoping this will become permanent? Well, do you think it could be lifted in a few years? What are you hoping to see from this this closure zone?
Well, I'd be hoping that it would be permanent and that it does have, full protection ongoing.
Whyalla Mayor Claire McLaughlin speaking with Lucas Forbes. We'll head across to the Bureau of Meteorology now. We're senior forecaster Jenny Horvat has the latest. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Cassie. You're trying to combine forecaster and Horvat into one there.
Yeah. So we've seen this system move across the state. What's coming in behind it?
Yeah, that's right. Still the chance to see a bit of shower activity following this system, especially around the southern parts of the agricultural area. But we are seeing those showers push into the south of the pastoral district. We saw a couple of millimetres in the last 24 hours pushing up around Lee Creek, and we saw some higher totals up in the Mount Lofty ranges where we saw some falls of up to 25 millimetres, and we had a good bit of a drop down in the lower southeast as well with nearly 20 millimetres falling down there as well. So still the chance to see some shower activity around for the remainder of the day, and again on Friday, maybe a little bit more hit and miss as we roll on into Friday. Quite extensive areas of low cloud and fog patches around the state this morning in the gaps in the cloud, and again tomorrow morning we could be seeing that broadly across the agricultural area and the south of the pastoral districts. Chance to see our showers continuing again on Saturday. We've got another front, so we're probably going to see a little bit of enhancement with that shower activity around, especially across the southern agricultural area. It might struggle to get to the pastoral districts on Saturday, but again still some moisture around there, so it could be a bit of a foggy start on Saturday morning as well. By Sunday, we're probably looking at morning fog patches being confined to the southeast, but things are really going to start ramping up from the west. So we've got a more significant cold front coming across from the west, so we're going to see our winds really freshening in that northerly and shifting fresh to strong northwest to westerly in the west ahead of that change. So that's sort of settling in during the afternoon and evening period. We'll see our showers developing from the west and moving across, probably reaching central and eastern parts later in the day on Sunday. We could also see some thunderstorm activity coming across with this system on Sunday as well, mostly in the south and mostly in the west, but potentially reaching central districts as we head into the later part on Sunday. Some of those thunderstorms could be quite gusty as they come across as well. So it's a real substantial winter front coming through just to see us through to the end of autumn there. So quite a wet system and quite a windy system as well. Still be feeling those effects on the Monday. Still quite a lot of wind around as that low pressure system slowly moves and that front extends through remaining parts, probably Monday morning or early afternoon. So a good chance to see those showers again pushing into the south of the pastoral district, with a very high chance of seeing those showers across the agricultural area and the Mount Lofty ranges. So things will slowly start to settle down on Tuesday and Wednesday, but still the chance to see some showers to the end of Thursday, especially across the agricultural area. Gusty thunderstorms again possible in the south on Monday as well, and we could be looking at some quite high tides and swells as we head into early next week as well. Generally looking at some of those rainfall totals that we could see up until midnight Monday, generally 2 to 5 millimetres over the southern parts of the pastoral district, remaining dry in the far north, but increasing to 5 to 15 millimetres over the Riverland, northern agricultural areas, and falls of 15 to 30 about the southern agricultural areas, and higher falls about the Mount Lofty ranges of around 30 to 60 millimetres, Cassie.
Thanks so much for that. Jenny Horvat from the Bureau of Meteorology there. Hopefully some of that comes off because a lot of people are looking for it. In the far west of New South Wales, the upper western will be partly cloudy. There's a chance of fog in the east, a high chance of showers in the southeast, but a medium chance elsewhere. Overnight, down to 11 degrees, but it'll get up to 19 to 22 during the day. The lower western will be partly cloudy and more fog in the far east in the early morning. There is a high chance of showers in the far east. Overnight temperatures will get down to 10, but the daytime temperatures will reach about 19 degrees. It's coming up to 12:30.
You're listening to The Country Hour. For more stories from across the country, go to abc.net.au/rural. On ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill, this is Cassie Huff. Cassie Huff.
Good afternoon, I am Cassie Huff. It's lovely to have your company this afternoon. Now, are you one of the many Australians who have turned to a plant-based milk, or juice as some people like to refer to it? It's that these plant-based milks are continuing their push into your diet. And I'd be interested to know if you have a favourite, because, well, almond milk or juice has reigned supreme for some time. Oat milk is gaining ground.
Oat will be the number one very shortly. So in the next, say, 6 to 12 months, you'll find oat will take over from almond. It emulates dairy probably better than most other plant milks.
So I'd be interested to know whether you've made the change, whether you alternate between them or you have a favourite. Just how interested are you in consuming these plant-based milk products? Text me 0467922891 or phone 1300 222 891. Most of the rain has made its way across the state, but we have heard from a few farmers. Dan has said that they've had 7.5 millimetres at Pinneroo, nicely topping up the 12 millimetres a couple of weeks ago after our locational drought last year. It's an amazing start to the year with crops establishing well and just about to start spreading urea. A bit of confidence there from Dan. Tom from Oraru has only had 3 millimetres, though for May, very dry, no germination, dry sowing. And another texter has texted in to say 4 millimetres at Borica in, I think that's sort of mid-north, Murrayland sort of way, still dust coming out the back of the air cedar. So a bit of a mixed bag for farmers across the state with this rain, but it's a very crucial time of year for farmers to get rain to get their crops up and growing. So there could be more on the way this weekend. Fingers crossed the people who need it get it. But in the meantime, we'll head across to the news desk to find out what's happening in news with Wendy Glamacek. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Cassie. In the news this hour, more bill shock is on the way with electricity prices for householders to soar by hundreds of dollars a year in some cases. It's thanks to an 18.5% increase of the benchmark electricity price that's been approved by Australia's energy regulator. The regulator blames the rising cost of coal and gas and the war in Ukraine for the move. There's a push by prosecutors to make a Victorian teenager accused of murdering a man in an alleged gang fight face trial as an adult. The 17-year-old accused from Melbourne, who can't be identified, is charged with last month's stabbing murder of Noor Boll, a 25-year-old Victorian man who was found with multiple stab wounds on North Terrace. The youth court heard today that because of the serious nature of the charge, the DPP wants the case moved to the Adelaide Magistrates Court instead of the youth court. And Twitter will pay a $210 million penalty to settle US regulators' claims that the platform failed to protect the privacy of users' data over a six-year span. Regulators say Twitter failed to disclose that it used people's personal information to enable companies to send targeted online ads. More ABC News at 1 o'clock.
Thanks for that, Wendy. Now, it seems that just about all people can talk about is what things are costing these days. I was at the AusVeg Awards last night, and the cost of lettuce and broccoli and all these things was a lot of what was dominating the conversation. And I know people are feeling the same thing when they're going to their supermarket or grocer. But away from just those greengrocers and things like that, wheat is such a staple, and flour. And with the wheat prices going up for farmers, the flow-on effect could see things like flour prices rising in your supermarket as well. But an Eyre Peninsula mill owner says he believes consumers will continue to support and buy local flour. Bill Butterfield at Cummins Mills says South Aussies are pretty passionate about supporting local farmers and are happy to see them get higher prices, as long as it is going back to the farmer. Brooke Nindorf caught up with him to find out how busy the mill has been.
Of course, it's been a different sort of a period right throughout the COVID. That's gone on for a couple of years. We had a big rush on the flour back here 2 years ago, and now it's more back to just normal orders. And yes, we're increasing our sales and expanding our area, working on our quality. And on the stock feed side of things, that's slowly growing too. But as we go forward, well, prices will change. There's absolutely no doubts about that, because everything that we do here is related around grain. And I think that it's great that grain prices are high, because they need to be for the farmers. And consequently, what will happen as we keep producing, well, it's just going to have to be passed on. And that's the way it'll be. We've got to have our margins out of it. And there's no doubt about it, whether it be flour or whether it be stock feeds or chicken feeds or whatever, they'll have an increase.
What are you noticing so far, and what sort of prices and monetary value are you seeing with an increase?
Look, I think it's probably going to increase 10 to 15%. We're trying to keep our prices down, in particular with all the flour, as we'll talk shortly about our robot that we've installed. We'll talk about that, saving money there and in improving things. But all in all, we've changed our packaging. We do most of our packaging, or in fact all of our packaging, here in Cummins now, which gives keeps an extra job here. We've gone to paper bags, and those paper bags seem to be a lot more accepted by some of the public.
Do you think there will be concerns from purchasers of flour that the prices are going up, or they will see that as, you know, a positive for farmers, local farmers, that they are getting good prices?
I think that every time that a shopper goes into a supermarket or the corner store or whatever, that they buy what they need, and I'm sure that they fully understand that the prices, whether it be fruit and veg or whether it be flour or whether it's meat in the butcher shop or wherever, that the price is what the price is, and they have to try and shop wiser, buy quality foods. And I think that they know that it's a sign of the times, and that's the way it's going to be for a fair while, especially in the grain side of things, because how long's a piece of string, especially with what's going on over in Ukraine? And while that's going on, well, prices will remain up. But like I said before, I hope that they stay there, because farmers' input costs are the highest they've ever been. So it all got to balance out somewhere along the line.
Do you find that there's still the support there for the local flour, though, from consumers? Do you think they will still continue to support you if you have to put prices up?
Yeah, there won't be a problem there, Brooke. We get people getting in touch with us here at the mill, and we know through our research, especially with our Drake supermarket chains that we supply in Adelaide, along with the independents, that most people are looking for quality, and they know that with what we do here on Eyre Peninsula is as good as you can buy anywhere in the world.
How have you go with sourcing wheat, in particular for your flour, and then also grain for feed?
Just at the moment, we do have enough milling wheat on hand, but should anyone want to sell us milling wheat, we'll most certainly be glad to take it. Barley is another thing. We will be looking for supplies of wheat and barley between now and this next harvest.
Is there concerns that you might not be able to get it?
Not really, because we know that we've got some customers that come back every year, that they always have some left over after seeding and things like that. Like I said, we do have a reasonable amount on stock. I've been prepared for this, and we won't run out.
Bill Butterfield, you mentioned a robot there. Tell us about this and what you've added to the mill here.
Yes, going forward, well, we knew that we had to try and get to and keep up with modern technology, Brooke. And I suppose it started off back here about nearly 12 months ago, where we found it hard to find workers to come and do the type of work that the robot does. In particular, look, it's not easy work. It was stacking pallets and things like that. But look, we were looking for more productivity, and we're also looking for a better and cheaper way of being able to stack our stock feed. So this happens out in the stock feed shed, and the robot there, he can stack a pallet, a one-ton pallet, in 10 minutes, whereas it basically increases everything by about at least 5 to 10-fold.
I imagine probably not only cost-effective and time-effective, but, you know, when it comes to OH&S and those kind of things as well, it a better option too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's one of those things these days that heavy lifting, even though they're only 20 and 25 kilogram bags, it's still a lot. But I think the important part of it is that we've got a female warehouse manager, basically, and she is more than capable of being able to stitch and operate this machine, and so it lends itself to any of our staff at all to be able to go and do it, and the robot just keeps on working away minute after minute after minute.
Did you ever think that this mill here, which is more than 100 years old here in Cummins, would have a shiny bright robot working for it one day?
Well, I didn't envisage it when I first bought and took over the mill, but I knew that there was going to have to be upgrades somewhere along the line, because there was just so much that had to be done here and spent here. But I think that this is only the tip of the iceberg as far as technology is concerned, and possibly there won't be a lot more done in that area in this particular mill, because it is a very old mill. But if you were building a brand new mill, the whole lot would be automated without a doubt.
Cummins mill owner Bill Butterfield speaking with Brooke Nindorf there about the state of play with flour. Australia doesn't really import any wheat for things like flour. We produce enough of it here, but it's certainly affected by the global situation. Moving from one grain, I guess, to another, it wasn't long ago that if you wanted milk in your coffee, it was cow's milk, and the variety came in whether or not it was full cream or skim milk. But today, plant-based milk alternatives are on their way up, and they are making up to half of all drinks in Australian cafes these days. And as Angus McIntosh reports, one milk in particular is leading the charge.
If you're an Aussie barista, milk isn't just milk anymore. And when an order comes in for a plant-based milk, there's a lot to keep in mind.
Some of the easier ones I would say are oat and almond. Soy is probably one of the harder ones to deal with.
Dalen was a young barista fresh out of high school when oat milk became an option at this cafe in Williams, 2 hours southeast of Perth. And it wasn't long before customers noticed.
Probably a year or so ago, halfway through the year, I think, it just started really taking over. It was like a month or so, and oat was one of the really big ones that everyone was getting.
Last year, a survey of 900 Australian cafes found a quarter of customers chose plant-based milk. Those trends paint a promising picture for the big three plant milks sold today. The latest numbers show almond is on top, soy is slowly falling in the market, and oat is rising fast. Cafe market analyst Sean Edwards says altogether they could make up half of the cafe drinks market within 2 or 3 years.
You know, the growth rate's been pretty incredible, especially for plant milks like oat milk. Oat will be the number one very shortly, so in the next, say, 6 to 12 months, you'll find oat will take over from almond. It emulates dairy probably better than most other plant milks.
And in Williams, oat milk isn't just sold in cafes. The Wheatbelt town is also home to oat growers and a processing mill. It's where Ben Cole runs a company turning these local oats into milk for cafes and supermarkets around the country. For now, much of the processing takes place offshore, but he's got plans to turn local oats into milk without ever leaving the state.
The plant that we want to produce is at least 20 million litres per annum. We think in Australia now there's at least 100 million litres of oat milk and plant-based milks being consumed. And what we're seeing is this upward trend of anywhere from 10 to 20% uptick in plant-based milk.
Just a few kilometres out of town, farmer Steve Ford is seeding his third season of oats destined for the milk market. He hopes premium markets like oat milk can help sustain more farmers in his region, particularly his four sons.
If those premiums are there and are large enough, it will give us farmers the opportunity to perhaps investigate these principles of farming further and produce food hopefully with more integrity. And that will be more intensive work-wise, but still profitable. And I've said to you, Angus, I've got four boys, and if they all want to go farming, we may have to look at those things going forward.
Steve Ford's oats are milled just down the road from Williams, but the final processing to make oat milk currently takes place in Italy before the cartons are shipped back to Australian supermarkets and cafes. It will cost Wide Open Agriculture $20 million to build a facility in WA that's capable of doing the job on shore. And until it can, dairy farmers are questioning the environmental credentials of a product that's marketed as the sustainable option. Ian Noakes is dairy president of WA Farmers.
Why would you drink these? This is not even made in Western Australia. It's not even processed here. Whereas our milk is picked up every day off farm. It's fresh and it's healthy. And we will be environmentally sustainable. So you go, well, why wouldn't you keep drinking cow's milk?
For years, dairy farmers have contested the use of words like milk and creamy for plant-based products. This February, a Senate inquiry recommended the ACCC restrict the use of meat labels for plant proteins, but it stopped short of recommending the same for non-dairy milks.
Do Australians have a moral or ethical responsibility to support dairy farmers, and is that different to the responsibility they might have for other kinds of farmers?
No, I don't believe so. I think we have to show that we are responsible custodians of our land, and we are definitely making changes on climate policies. Farmers are very well aware they have to lower their carbon footprint.
ABS data shows plant milk's rise isn't coming at the expense of dairy. In the last three financial years, Australians' dairy milk consumption has only fallen around 2%. Sean Edwards says in cafes, both camps are actually increasing.
I don't think dairy's lost ground in volume, but they've lost market share. You know, there's been some massive coffee consumption going over COVID from, you know, working from home. The home market's been really strong.
Whatever it's labelled and wherever it's sold, demand for plant milk isn't slowing down, and farmers like Steve Ford don't want it to. His farm will only supply a fraction of the oats needed for WA's first oat milk processing plant, planned to open by December next year.
I think that's a pretty big pie out there. There's more and more people to feed, and I don't see a problem with it. But what do you want to do? Ban plant-based milks? It's never going to happen. If the consumer wants plant-based milks, if it can be grown in WA and processed in WA and create opportunities for WA people, that has to be a great thing.
Williams oat farmer Stephen Ford ending that report by Angus McIntosh. And indeed, there is some of that going on in South Australia as well. You can go online to abc.net.au/rural to read more on that. But I am interested in your thoughts. Are you among the people who are jumping onto the oat milk bandwagon? I'd be interested to know why. Gail has texted in to say that she doesn't drink oat milk, but will have almond if it isn't available. We'll have it if almond isn't available. Also, Corrine has said that she likes to have oat milk in her coffee and porridge. Makes sense in porridge, I guess. Her husband prefers soy. It's interesting that soy is losing ground. Corrine also uses almond milk for cooking because a member of the household is celiac and they don't have any dairy now. Some interesting thoughts there. Also, an interesting text in from someone in regard to the non-dairy milk debate and the common denominator of milk and its non-dairy alternative seems to be the colour white. And this texter says, I suppose that is because real milk is that colour. And there seems to be this philosophy of if it's white, it's right, like almond or rice or oat, etc. This person said they'll have more respect for their views when they use milk that is not always white. What about looking at the nutritional value like calcium instead of colour? This texter wants to invent spinach milk for its iron content or beetroot milk for its beetroot content. this person says if they add cow's milk, might have just invented an Italian milk flag. Well, thanks so much for your text there. I wonder if it is the colour that is really just the element there, and whether a spinach milk would be milk alternative would be perhaps something that would actually work as well. I've also had another text in about how it takes 5 litres of water to grow one almond kernel. I don't know if these numbers are accurate, but Wayne has texted in to say so. And we grow a lot of almonds in the Murray-Darling Basin. Trees require a lot of water, so turning them into milk is an absolute joke. Keep your texts coming, 0467 922 891, or phone 1300 222 891. We'll keep talking about oats, though, because there's actually been an international collaboration between universities and scientists to decode the genome of oats. Now, that's a big deal because it allows breeders to be selective when they're creating new lines, and that could mean increased yield, drought tolerance, higher protein, or it could also mean getting oats one step closer to being included in a gluten-free diet. Professor Michelle Colgrave from Edith Cowan University and the CSIRO says that the genome unlocks everything you need to know about oats.
The genome refers to essentially the blueprint that essentially defines the DNA that sits behind the plant material, and then that defines which proteins, which carbohydrates, which nutrients are actually laid down into those oats that then provide the nutrition source for us as humans looking to consume them.
And you've now got a copy of that blueprint. Has that been done before at all with oats?
So with oats, there has been a previous genome sequence by PepsiCo, who make the Quaker oats. But this is a really detailed annotation of the oat genome. And we've been able to show that it's quite distinct and different from many of the other cereal grains.
This work basically allows you to better understand which genes are responsible for which traits within oats. But then that understanding also looks at what might trigger certain reactions or allergies. So how does that play into the food market, potentially into the future?
Cereal grains are often known because of the fact that they contain gluten. So when we think about wheat and barley and rye, they're all gluten-containing. But before now, there's been some debate over whether oats contained the same gluten proteins that could trigger that autoimmune disorder. And so what we've been able to do in this work, by creating that blueprint, we can then look at that blueprint and say, are these proteins are the ones that can trigger that autoimmune reaction, and therefore are they actually safe for people with celiac disease or gluten intolerance? And in doing that, we were able to annotate precisely those proteins and look at the number of what we call epitopes. That's like a small piece of the protein that actually triggers the disease. And we looked at the number of those and the prevalence of those, and we're able to show that there's far fewer in oats than there are in the other cereal grains. And so that what that does is it points to the fact that these are far less likely to be harmful for people with celiac disease.
So currently oats are not in a gluten-free diet. Could that change now with this work that you've done?
Yeah, it certainly could. And this is really a stepping stone towards that. There's still clinical trials that are underway with some of our collaborators to really confirm that that's the case. What this research does and this mapping of these health or anti-nutritional proteins within oats has done is really allowed us to theoretically understand that they should be safe, but now we just have to absolutely prove that to ensure that the subpopulation who are sensitive are in fact going to be safe.
Does it open the door to, in the future, entirely breed that trait out of oats, so it's, you know, if there's concern that a small amount is still there which could cause a reaction, could you breed it out of future lines?
What we can do with this is we can now develop methods, and we have some methods in hand already that allow us to select particular lines when you're in a breeding program. So you can choose a line that you know has very low amounts of what the small amount of gluten proteins that remain. And so you can do that also for other health beneficial proteins. So you could target something that you know is going to bring a health benefit, and you can then select a line that will enhance that health functionality. And similarly, we know that there's high protein crops that are really great in terms of delivering plant-based foods. So we could actually select for higher protein at the same time deselecting for anything that could be causing harm.
And does that also flow through to the paddock, making oats more resistant to drought, disease, that sort of thing?
Yeah, by having this blueprint, we can actually look for any trait. So we can look in there for proteins that will be defence molecules against, say, a pest stress, or that may improve, as you say, the drought resilience, or perhaps looking at impacts like salinity. So any trait at all, we can now sort of start to understand by having this blueprint available to us.
Professor Michelle Colgrave from Edith Cowan University and the CSIRO speaking to Joe Prendergast. It's 7 minutes to one. Finally today, from swimming in a dam to riding on a tractor, farm life can be lots of fun, but for kids it can also have a dangerous side. With about 8 children a week hospitalised from farm-related injuries, a popular storybook character has teamed up with a not-for-profit safety group to share an important message. Eliza Berlage has this story.
Do you remember the saying, stop, drop and roll? Or perhaps the dumb ways to die song? Well, this is your latest earworm.
Don't wear a funny grin and mess around on that silo bin. And don't be a headless chook by going near chemicals and ending up crook. Plenty of ways to stop up.
The Farm Safety Song is part of a bunch of free educational resources to help keep kids out of harm's way. George the Farmer co-founder Simone Kane explains how the collaboration with FarmSafe came about.
Well, we were approached by FarmSafe, and Ben, my business partner, and I, we've both grown up on farms, and we're acutely aware of how dangerous a place they can be. You know, you've got that beautiful freedom of growing up on a farm, but with that freedom comes obviously a greater opportunity to be harmed. You know, I grew up with carrying around on motorbikes and helping Dad drive the ute while he unloaded hay on the back, and my parents also had a livestock transport business, and so that operated from our home depot, and we always had massive trucks coming and going. But I guess for me, because I was always scared of big machinery, that was probably a lucky thing I didn't go near that. But for kids that are curious, and and maybe more so boys, that could have been a different scenario. And with Ben, he's got lots of different stories of tearing around on his motorbike and going shooting from a young age with his younger brother. So there's all these opportunities for this freedom, but definitely a greater risk. And actually, I remember when I was about 10, one of my close girlfriends at the time at school, and her farm was next to us, her brother fell off the back of a tractor and lost his leg in a PTO, which was horrific. And, you know, not just for the people that lose their limbs or harm themselves or are killed, but the people who are the first responders, and they have to live on with those consequences for a long time. There's lots of awful, awful stories, and I think most people have their own stories, and people that they know have been in those situations. So for us, it was a really natural fit to be able to use our brand platform with George. And, you know, we do lots of creative and fun things with stories and our music and our educational resources to engage kids and help them learn in a really fun way. And that's where we're hoping to make a difference with these resources.
What are some of the key messages or ways that you've been able to create this engaging safety information for children?
With our music video, we've tried to make it fun. You know, there's lots of safety messages out there that are really dry, and not just kids. I mean, adults just tune out. They're boring. We've tried to do something different, which absolute kudos to FarmSafe with supporting us to try and do something different. So, for instance, in our lyrics for the song, Ben came up with some awesome lyrics. There's things like, don't be a silly shazza and go and do doughies in your dad's old tractor. Don't be a ding-a-ling and think that murky dam is good for a swim. Don't think you're safe in Butte and fall off the back of a moving ute. And so we've created this really engaging animation that goes along with the lyrics, and it is a bit of an earworm. Like, it will absolutely get caught in your head, and with that, you know, we hope that they're those messages that are enforced in kids' minds when they're out there on the farm and they think, oh yeah, okay, don't be ding-a-ling, or, you know, don't be a silly shazza. But with the educational resource that we have, the teachers, that's all, everything's absolutely free to use as well, and can be downloaded from georgethefarmer.com.au or farmsafe.org.au.
FarmSafe Executive Officer Stevie Howdall says she hopes the resources will help the next generation make smart and safe choices.
Unfortunately, here in Australia, we've had a very stubborn statistics of child fatalities on farm. For the last probably 10 to 20 years, it's stuck stubbornly around 15% of fatalities being children under the age of 15. one of the key things that we've explored through the song and through the resource is we're not just targeting the statistics or the issues that are showing to be the most dangerous for children, but also making them aware of things that they might encounter as they're growing or when they're older farmers. Because if we can get this message into their head and normalize safe practices and safe behaviors early on, then, you know, we're raising a generation of future farmers that is risk aware and able to have a healthy and productive life on farm, much more so than, you know, in the past when these things were sort of just taken as everyday parts of the life and you just sort of accepted the risk. So it's really great to get the message into them early and hopefully shape their future to be thinking of safety first and remembering that the best farmer they can be is someone who comes home safe at night. Let's make sure
safe. Farm Safe Executive Officer Stevie Howdle speaking with Eliza Burlage. Important message there. Thanks for all your texts today. It's been great to have you as part of the conversation. More to come on your ABC local radio, whether you're in the regions or in Adelaide. Sonia Feldhoff will be coming up soon. Right now, though, it is coming up to 1 o'clock. Time for news.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.